All ready to go.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome all to the licensing committee at which is virtually on Zoom, of course, now, and that's on the day Tuesday, the 4th of August. Do we have any apologies? I have Councillor Wyman.
And Councillor Faulkner.
Thank you. Do we have any declarations of interest? That's a no. Any urgent business to be brought forward before the committee?
No, there's none, Chair.
We have the minutes of our last meeting. We've all had those if we think the correct record of what took place. I would like a proposal for the minutes be approved. Councillor Sue McGarry, and seconded by Councillor Bev Ashcroft. All those in favour, please raise your hand. If you could raise your hand virtually, please, not wave at the screen. I think that's everybody.
Yeah, that's the unanimous, Chair.
Unanimous, thank you. None against, no abstentions. Thank you. Our next business is to delegate functions under the Business Planning Act. So I'll bring in Margaret Woolley, our enforcement officer.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Good morning, councillors. The Business and Planning Act 2020 received royal assent on the 21st of July 2020. The Act introduces provisions for pavement licences. The process provides a streamlined and cheaper route for businesses such as cafes, restaurants and bars to secure a licence to place furniture on the highway. The new provisions are designed to support businesses to operate safely whilst social distancing measures remain in place. Once a licence is granted, it cannot remain in force beyond the 30th of September 2021. A set of conditions has been produced which combine the Staffordshire County Council highways requirements, local conditions and the two national conditions. A fee has been calculated in consultation with our finance department, which equates to £82. The Act does not allow us to charge anything over £100. We would ask the committee to consider and approve the three recommendations at section 12 of the report. Firstly, that the powers be delegated to head of service, enforcement manager and officers to enable applications to be dealt with in a timely manner. Secondly, to approve the conditions as suitable. And finally, that the licence fee be set at £82. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for our enforcement officer? Councillor Sue McGarry.
Thank you, Chair. I've been looking forward for this policy to come forward for quite some time now. Lots of local businesses have been coming forward saying, you know, we really need help and support to try and make this social distancing work within their business. So I'm really, really pleased that this has now come forward. I do believe that the £82 fee is good value for money. We're keeping it under that £100, which is great. And Chair, I would like to propose that we go with all those recommendations as highlighted by the enforcement officer today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anybody else have any questions or anything that they'd like to add? I have just a few, really. Where it says upon taking any glasses, there's no glasses or bottles to be taken outside of licensed premises. Does this mean cafes as well? Do they all have to have plastic glasses or?
Yes.
That's for outside as well. They have to have sort of a plastic coffee cup or a paper cup as such.
Yeah, yeah. You can get the takeaway. You know, you go, if you go into McDonald's, you get the to-go course, those sorts of things.
And the cleaning of the area, that's down to the actual people as well, and to the cafe owners. And 10 p.m. is the latest they can be outside.
Yeah.
That was correct. That's all good. And how does our £82 compare with other areas, do you know?
Well, we did a bit of a scoping exercise with other local authorities. We mainly looked at the Staffordshire County Council area, because the conditions are all very similar across the board. And some, I think there was Cannock, Stoke, Tamworth and Newcastle, they weren't making a charge. However, Stoke have been issuing street cafe licences previous to this, and they didn't make a charge for that either. So I think that's why they haven't chosen to make charge a fee. But Stafford Borough Council and the Moorlands, they're charging £100. And I just went to South Derbyshire and they're charging £100 as well. So I think, you know, we could have chosen to charge nothing, but then it would have been a charge to the authority for us to continue to administer the function.
Yeah, the only other thing that I noticed, I know I wasn't over sure of, it says there's a 100 millimetre tapping bar on any A boards or furniture, and I didn't know what a tapping bar was.
Sorry, so let me just double check. What was the tapping? Which condition was that one?
That was on the on all the furniture, and let's say an A board that's on there. Let's say they're a metre high and 0.6 of a metre wide with a 100 millimetre tapping.
It's the bars that keep them secure.
I see, like support. Yeah, okay. That's fine. That's all I have to. So we've had that. Can I have a seconder for that, please? Oh, Chris Sylvester, have you got something to add, Chris?
Yeah, yes, thank you, Chair. It's for Margaret. Were we charging anything before we passed this for the licences, the pre-licences?
We haven't actually issued street cafe licences before, or pavement licences as such. I know there's one or two out there already with tables and chairs out, and we're going to follow those up. They may have received a letter from the County Council giving them permissions to put them there. So that's what we need to sort of address.
Okay, thanks. I saw quite a few places outside, so I assumed they were already issued some.
No.
Thank you.
The community and civil enforcement officers have been, when they're out and about, they're letting us know which premises have already got tables and chairs outside. There's one or two, I think there's one that springs to mind in Abbots Bromley, where they've got a table and chair on the pavement, and it wouldn't really meet the criteria because it doesn't give you enough room to get a wheelchair around. So we'd have to have a good look at that to see if they could relocate them slightly, or they might have to remove them altogether. But I need to see if the County Council have issued them with a letter to say that they're allowed to do so.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you. Mark Risk, our head of service, wants to say something for us.
Thank you, Chair. Just really to make the point on charging, that the charging sort of rate that you see in the report is in line with the Council's corporate policy on charging. So that's the basis on which the £82 charge is, you know, it's coming into effect or is being proposed. So I'm not sure what those other options are doing. They're not charging anything. It does make clear the state that, or there's an acceptance that the cost of undertaking this work would be, in some cases, in excess of £100. But nevertheless, the Act does limit the amount that authorities can charge to £100. So obviously, we're just acting in line with our council corporate policy. Just to reassure members.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, we've had that proposed. Can I have a seconder for that, please? Councillor Bev Ashcroft. All those in favour?
Sorry, Chair, I'll do a named vote.
Oh, so, my apologies. Yeah, we'll do a named vote on that then. We'll let Monica take charge of that.
Yeah, in no particular order. Councillor Fletcher. You're muted, Councillor.
You have to not vote with your hand on this occasion, you have to speak it.
Yes, I'm for.
Yeah. Councillor Legge.
For.
Councillor McGarry.
For.
Councillor Hall.
For.
Councillor Ashcroft.
For.
Councillor Ackroyd.
For.
Councillor Gaskin.
For.
Councillor Sylvester.
For.
And Councillor Toon.
For.
Thank you, that's Gary, Chair.
Thank you. Right, the next item on the agenda is a briefing for the new DFT statutory standards for taxi and PHV drivers. I'll call on our enforcement officer once again.
Thank you, Chair. you will have received a document from the Department for Transport which details the statutory taxi and private hire standards. The standards within the document, it came out in this July, that they take immediate effect. The document outlines standards to be applied to the licensing of taxi and private hire vehicles by local authorities. And the focus of the standards is protecting children and vulnerable adults. Whilst the authority has a robust policy and many of the standards in place already, I just wanted to cover some of those areas that will still require implementing. So firstly, I'll talk about the disclosure and barring service. Currently, applications for drivers are taken and an enhanced DBS certificate is obtained. This is carried out through the U-Check service, so an online application. And then we carry out the check on renewal every 3 years. New and renewal drivers are encouraged now to sign up to the DBS update service. So moving forwards, drivers will require, under the new standards, they'll require a DBS check every 6 months. So it does make sense that they sign up to the service. The update service therefore can be utilised by licensing officers to carry out a biannual check without the need for drivers to have a full disclosure. So it will be cheaper for the drivers as well. The standards also advise that vehicle proprietors should obtain a basic DBS disclosure certificate. So whilst majority of vehicle proprietors are also drivers, the licensing team moving forwards will be required to obtain the basic disclosure for those that are a vehicle proprietor only. And they'll be required to submit to a basic disclosure annually. Licensing procedures can be updated to reflect this change. Private hire operators are currently not required to have a DBS disclosure carried out. The standards advise that those that apply and are in possession of an operator's licence will also require a basic disclosure. If the licence is applied for by a company or partnership, then all those listed will also be required to submit a basic disclosure. This will be required annually again, and licensing procedures will be updated to reflect this change. So, moving on to disclosure of applications that are refused, revoked and suspended. Working together is a key message within the statutory standards. The LGA commissioned the National Anti-Fraud Network to develop a national register of taxi and private hire vehicle driver's license refusal and revocation. The register is known as NR3. Tools such as NR3 should be used by licensing authorities to share information on a more consistent basis to mitigate the risk of non-disclosure of the relevant information by an applicant. To date, we haven't signed up to the NR3 register. However, I've received an email this morning after making inquiries where I can register today. And then we can put our information on the register and get information back, but I'm sure they're going to be inundated by local authorities over the next few months. The cost per year for being on the register and being a member is £1,500. So, complaints against licensees. The authority has a database which records complaints regarding licensees. On our website, we publish a stay safe message and details of how to complain. Moving forwards, the licensing team will introduce a link on the licensing webpage which will enable those who wish to make a complaint to do so more easily. Also, a notice for drivers to place in their vehicles regarding how to make a complaint to the council will also be introduced. So, safeguarding awareness and county lines exploitation. The standards state that all authorities should provide safeguarding advice and guidance and to undertake safeguarding training. Currently, advice and guidance is issued as part of the application and knowledge test process. Full training for those already licensed is conducted classroom style every 3 years. The licensing team had arranged to train all 675 drivers prior to the pandemic and lockdown, and therefore these plans are currently on hold. The team are now researching how we can run training around safeguarding and county lines exploitation remotely or via an alternative method. And over the last couple of days, we have received quotes from companies that we are unable to engage with. So it's just choosing the right content and the right provider now that we can move that forwards. CCTV in vehicles. The Department for Transport view of CCTV in vehicles is that whilst it will never completely remove the possibility of harm to passengers by drivers, it can provide an additional deterrent to prevent this and the investigative value when it does. The use of CCTV can provide a safer environment for the benefit of vehicle passengers and for drivers. The standards state that all licensing authorities should consult to identify if there are local circumstances which indicate that the installation of CCTV in vehicles would have either a positive or adverse net effect on safety of taxi and private hire users, including children or vulnerable adults, and taking into account the potential privacy issues, and tend to, moving forwards, have a look at how we can consult with the trade and with members and other organisations to indicate whether or not we pursue CCTV in all our vehicles. So moving on to booking and dispatch staff. Private hire drivers are not the only direct contact that private hire users have with the private hire operator staff. For example, the person taking the booking and dispatching the vehicle. This position could be exploited by those seeking to exploit children and vulnerable adults. It is therefore appropriate that these staff do not pose an undue risk to anyone. The standards state that licensing authorities should be satisfied that private hire vehicle operators can demonstrate that all staff that have contact with the public and oversee the dispatching of vehicles do not pose a risk to the public. Therefore, the authorities operator conditions will require amending to include a condition of granting an operator license that require the operator to keep a register of all staff that will take bookings or dispatch vehicles to be kept. Conditions will also need to include that operators have had sight of a basic DBS disclosure for the staff and that they are compatible with their policy on employing ex-offenders. Staff should also have to advise the operator of any convictions while they are employed in the role. Operators may also outsource bookings and dispatch functions. Conditions will need to be amended that operators will be required to provide evidence that comparable protections are applied by the company that outsourced the function to. Conditions will also need to be amended stating that the licensing authority requires operators to provide their policy on employing ex-offenders in the role of taking bookings and dispatching vehicles. So record keeping. Section 56 of the Local Government Miscellaneous Provisions Act 1976 requires private hire operators to keep records of journeys. The conditions relating to bookings will require amending to include the name of the person taking the booking and the individual who dispatches the vehicle. And these records will all be required to be kept for at least a 6 month period. Use of passenger carrying vehicles. Passenger carrying vehicles, licensed drivers, are subject to different checks from taxi and private hire licensed drivers. Members of the public are entitled to expect when making a booking with a private hire operator that they will get a private hire licensed driver and vehicle. Therefore, our conditions need to be updated to include passenger carrying vehicle drivers and public service vehicles cannot be used without the informed consent of the person who's made the booking. Finally, enforcing the licensing regime. Joint authorisation of officers. Where the need arises, licensing authorities should jointly authorise officers from other authorities so that compliance and enforcement action can be taken against licensees from outside our area. An agreement between licensing authorities to jointly authorise officers enables the use of enforcement powers regardless of which authority within the agreement the officer is employed by and which issued the licence. Prior to the pandemic, I was working in conjunction with colleagues from South Derbyshire and North West Leicestershire and have prepared a report for licensing committee to consider joint authorisation, and therefore I will continue and progress this and hopefully get that before the committee shortly. They're all of the considerations that I feel we need to address within the standards that are being brought out. And I'm happy to take any questions. I know there's a lot to cover there, but I can take any questions now.
Councillor Patricia Attcroyd.
Thank you, Chair. I did read through the slides that Philip Colvin's, I didn't actually listen to the webinar, I didn't have an hour and a half to spare, but I did read through the slides that he submitted with it, which I thought were extremely helpful and interesting. And there were just a couple of points. I don't know if I missed it, Margaret, when you were talking, but they mentioned the barred list check. And they said that only 10% of councils actually participated in that. So my first question is, do we participate in that?
Yes, we do.
And the second question is, he seemed to place a lot of emphasis on language and communication. And I know we've sort of tightened that up quite a lot in the last few years. Do we feel confident now that we have a satisfactory standard amongst our drivers of communication? I was very taken with the comment, one of the sort of throwaway comments almost, when he said, don't be the latest Rotherham. And we have had problems with our drivers in the past, some of which have meant they had to go to court. So I think communication is a big key factor in this. So I'd be interested to hear your opinion on that, please.
Thank you. Firstly, yes, we've always utilise the barred list. It depends what, it doesn't cost any more money, and it depends what code you put on the application. So we always get that information. I know recently we also get information about from the chief of police that they'll give you a little bit more information on a candidate as well, which we're able to, part of it we're able to share with committee if a driver's going before you. So yes, we do. The language aspect, prior to lockdown, we've really only just started using the new oral test by telephone. So it really was in its early stages. We've only had 11 taking the test, 5 had passed, and then the others were coming back for a retest once we got up and running again. And I can inform you that we have started doing knowledge tests again and the verbal tests. So they're all underway, albeit they all are one-to-one with officers now. We're not doing a group session. So it's really early days for how the oral tests will go. And we did say we would review it in 6 months. We may need to give that slightly longer now due to the circumstances we're under. But I'm quite enthused by what officers are telling me and how they're going. So it's just watch this space really with the language. We already do a test whereby they have to write, the knowledge test is written, and also they have to write a receipt for a passenger so we can check the skills in that area. So that's basically it. But with regard to the language side, we can also, if we don't feel that current licensed drivers or operators, etc., meet our standards with regard to language, the committee can say, we want you to take the test. So at least we can utilise it for that as well, if we're not getting anywhere or we feel that they're deficient in the language area.
Thank you. Chair, can I just ask one more thing, please?
You can.
I'm interested that you've been doing a telephone oral test. Is there not some sort of security issue with that to make sure that the individual that you're actually talking to is the correct individual?
The driver actually sits with the licensing officer. They use our telephone.
Right.
So they're actually, we do the knowledge test and then afterwards we do the oral test. So they're actually sitting with the officer while it's taking place.
That's very reassuring. Thank you very much, Margaret. Thanks, Jeff.
Councillor Toome.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, my question's just been answered by Margaret, so it's all right. Thank you.
Thank you. Should somebody change their name, which seems to be happening more and more? I know they're asked on their form if there's any previous names that they've used, but is there any check on that we do to ensure that they've not been completely truthful and saying that they've not changed the names or anything?
Yes, as part of the application process, or should they change their names whilst they're a licensee, because we do have quite a few that change their names while they're the license with us. We need the certificate from the solicitor showing the change of name, and they are required then to undergo a DBS check again, so that we've got all the information. They have to provide all the documentation again in the new name, so driving license, passport. If they're a visitor and they have an immigration status, then again, they have to have all those checks in place as well.
Very good. Also on the CCTV in the taxis, I know in the license trade, I think it's 30 days that you have to keep the recordings for. How long would the taxi drivers need to keep their recordings for?
It would be the same, but they have to have policies and procedures in place. And they've all, in the last policy that we sent out, there was information on CCTV and how they have to comply with the Surveillance Commissioner's rules and regulations. So if they've got it in the cabs, they have to put notices up. They have to have privacy buttons or to show that they're recording and to tell the passenger that they're recording. So that they do have to have measures in place to enable them to have the CCTV.
Mm-hmm. So should a passenger request that the CCTV not be used, would that be appropriate?
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, okay, that's good. That's all the questions I have. Is there anybody else, any other questions for Margaret? No, well, thank you all. I don't think we have a vote on that. So thank you all for attending the licensing committee. It's been nice to see everybody virtually, but it'll be even nicer to see you all in the flesh when we can. And I hope that's sooner rather than later, but that's out of our hands, of course. So thank you all, and I'll bring the meeting to a close.
Can I just say I'm sorry I was late? It wouldn't let me in at first. It took me a while to get in.
Okay. And
I'm very pleased to see the licensing laws being tightened.
Good. Thank you all.